Good morning, friends, and welcome to the Averagely Speaking podcast. I am thrilled to be here with you again today, and as always, have a completely random array of things to cover, so we will go ahead and jump right in. I think first off today, I want to talk about some food items. I have been having some inspiration lately, and so I just figured let's just talk about some food ideas. And the reason I originally wrote this down is because I discovered a new little snack, I guess, or meal, but probably more of a snack idea that I was really excited about and was something a little bit different than I normally do. So just thought I would talk about it. And that is apple bowls. I am a big purveyor of bowls of food, whether it be breakfast, a meal, a snack, whatever it is. I just like combining various types of flavors and textures and things into one bowl, and it's just an easy way to eat things. So maybe that would be like a smoothie bowl. I think I've talked about that before, where you have all sorts of different toppings, or like a savory Mexican bowl, like something, you know, similar to like a Chipotle, where you have like rice and beans and everything's just kind of like mixed in a bowl. That's just how I eat a lot of my meals. And the other day I had a couple of apples. And apples are one of those things that they always sound good in theory, and I like to add them to my grocery list a lot, or my meal plan a lot, because they are pretty filling and they last a long time in the pantry. And so I usually buy them, but then I'm never that excited to eat them. And then when I do actually eat them, I'm like, oh, these are pretty good. And so it's just one of those things I have to like mentally get over. And typically I'll eat apples with tahini or peanut butter, something like that. I do not like to eat them plain. It's like a little bit too tart for me. I need there to be like something to balance out the flavor. And I also feel like apples have so much volume that like it's a lot of the same flavor if you don't put something else with it. So anyway, I typically put some sort of topping with it, and it's just one of those annoying things to eat. Maybe this is why I never actually eat them, because I feel like they're like, you know, you have to cut them open, and then they're like all splayed out on like your cutting board or your plate, and they just take up a lot of space. And I usually just eat mine off of the cutting board instead of like falling off the cutting board, because I, of course, always use a cutting board that's way too small. And then I try to like dip it into the peanut butter or tahini, and it's like messy and it's getting everywhere. And so it's just a very unpleasant experience all around, at least the way that I do it. And so the other week, or the other day, when I was like, I need to eat this apple before it goes bad, I had the idea to just chop it up instead of cutting like wedges. I just chopped it up into like little bite-sized pieces and put it in a bowl, because I was like, then I can eat it with a spoon. It's just a cleaner vessel all around. And then I was like, I'll still put my tahini on it. And then it's just like a good way to make sure that you're distributing that topping for all the apples. Cause that's the other thing, is like, if I, let's say I wanted to eat like a tablespoon of peanut butter with my apple, well, a tablespoon doesn't go very far. And so that I end up either like saving all the peanut butter towards the end, so the first three quarters of the apple is just eating plain, or I'll eat it all up front and have nothing at the back end. And so it's just not a very good system. So I discovered that chopping up the apples and putting them in a bowl and then drizzling over whatever like nut butter, whatever other toppings you have, was just a ultimately better experience, because it's distributing the toppings evenly and it's a much cleaner thing. You don't have to use your hands. You can walk around with it. Like, things aren't falling off the cutting board. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is genius. So then I started thinking like, well, you can do way more than just peanut butter or tahini or nut butter. Like, you can just keep putting on all sorts of different toppings and make this a more exciting snack. And so the first one I did was peanut butter and chocolate chips. That's like a go-to. I love peanut butter and chocolate chips. So I started off trying that. It was great. Again, you can just kind of spoon things up, get a little bit in each bite. Loved it. Another idea I had was tahini and hemp seeds. So a little bit more on the savory side, a little bit of bitter notes to balance out the sweetness of the apple. Also really good. And then I haven't tried these yet, but I was just like starting to think of all these different ideas. So another idea would be like a toffee and caramel. So like a caramel apple, if you will, but like, again, a much easier way to eat it. So you could put like that drizzly caramel and then like Heath bar broken up or something like that. Another idea is peanut butter and marshmallow fluff. So I don't like marshmallows, like the dry kind of whole marshmallows I don't like, but I do like marshmallow fluff or melted marshmallows. So I was thinking that would be good, kind of like a, I think people make sandwiches out of those flavor combinations. You could do something like, you know, chocolate chips and berries, or chocolate chips and goji berries, or, I mean, there's a million different toppings that you could do just to keep it interesting. But I was like, oh, this is something I'm going to explore now, because you still get that base of health from your apple and potentially from other toppings like hemp seeds, but you can also have more fun with it and make it into like a dessert if you want. And so, yeah, just wanted to share that, and I think it's definitely a win-win. Some of the other things I was thinking food-wise, and this is just stuff that I like kind of popped into my mind as things I've been enjoying lately. So the first thing is malto meal. I don't know how many people out there eat malto meal on the reg, but it is a go-to of mine and I absolutely love it. It's something that my dad used to make for my sister and me, or really the whole family, when we were little. And I don't know, I love the consistency of it. So I cannot eat oatmeal. I think I've mentioned this before. I do not like the texture of oatmeal or overnight oats, anything like that. Anything with like the oat still intact just freaks me out. Like, I will not eat an oatmeal cookie. I just don't like it. But malto meal is like a granular, so it makes it like a more porridgey type consistency, kind of similar to polenta, like if you make polenta fresh, not the kind that comes like in the tube that's like kind of hard, but like if you made fresh polenta, and it's like kind of like creamy, very small texture to it. I don't know how to describe it, but altogether more enjoyable than oatmeal, at least in my opinion. And the good thing about malto meal is it's pretty low calorie. If you make it with water, which is what I usually do because I'm lazy, it's lean, I would say, in terms of the calories. And you can have a pretty large portion. So I'll do a double portion or double serving when I make it. And it makes a pretty large bowl of it. And then you can put a lot of toppings on it because the actual base isn't a lot of calories and it's really filling. So I love that about it. I will typically do, or my favorite, I guess, flavor combination is butter and brown sugar. I'm just obsessed with that. So butter and brown sugar in your malto meal, not the healthiest thing, but delicious all the same. You can also do like coconut cream and brown sugar, or like coconut cream and maple syrup. You can do just like an almond milk and chocolate chips if you want. I don't love melted chocolate chips, so I wouldn't personally do that in a warm item, but you get the idea. Very similar to the apple bowls. You can put all sorts of different flavors on there. Hey, you can put apple bowl, you know, mix your apple bowl with your malto meal bowl, and there you go. It's a really low-cal, high-fiber meal. But anyway, that's just something that I've been enjoying lately. And then a couple of dessert things. So I feel like I have a knack for making delicious sweet combinations. I will play around with a lot of things because I usually just have like hodgepodge stuff around. I don't like plan out what I'm going to do for dessert per se. And so I usually just like combine a bunch of different things and see if it's good or not. And so I just like to do different combinations and they're usually pretty successful. So one of the ones they've been on lately is donuts and ice cream. Now, previously I wasn't a huge donut fan. I would get donuts as a kid, you know, when you go to the grocery store with your parents, but it wasn't something I like got a lot or craved a lot. And in particular, I never used to like yeasted donuts. I would always go for the old-fashioned ones that are more like cake-like and dense, but I'm definitely learning to like yeasted donuts a little bit more, but not necessarily on their own. I wouldn't love like just kind of like a cold standalone donut that's yeasted. So anyway, I got the idea the other day to heat up. Okay, so sorry. And as a step back, I also love a warm item with ice cream. I don't like cold, super frozen ice cream. I like my ice cream to be pretty melty. And I think it pairs really well with a warm item, just in the dessert itself, but also because the warm item helps the ice cream melt. So that being said, typically I'll do like a warm cookie or something. But I was like, what if I try a warm donut? And so I took a chocolate yeasted donut, which again is not something I would typically go for. So I feel like my tastes are evolving. And put that in the bottom of the bowl, microwaved it for a short amount of time until it was warm, not like melted, but like warm. And then I put ice cream on top, and I think I used it's like a salted salted honeycomb or salted toffee ice cream. I think it's the Tillamook cheese brand. And oh my God, it was absolutely amazing. It's again, that's that warm, cold combination. And then also the sweet savory combination was like perfection. I could not recommend it anymore. So just a little dessert idea for you. And then again, on the dessert train, this is something that I came up with a while ago, years ago, and I haven't had it recently, but I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, oh, I need to try that again. And that is mixing tahini and maple syrup. And you like put a little bit of each. Let's just say it's like a 1-for-1 ratio, or maybe like a 2 tahini to 1 maple syrup ratio. And you put it into some sort of bowl, ramekin, whatever, and mix it up really well. It becomes this like kind of thick, syrupy caramel consistency. Oh my gosh, it is the best thing ever. And it's vegan, plant-based, which is an awesome benefit to it. But sometimes I'll just mix that up and again, maybe put that on malto meal or something like that. It is absolutely delicious. So if you're looking for some sort of topping, like a sweet topping to put on ice cream or a muffin, it'd be really good on a muffin, anything like that, highly recommend. So I think that is all of my food and beverage recommendations for this week. The other thing kind of food related I want to talk about is some meal prep tips. So I have been doing meal prep for, as long as I can remember, probably as long as I've been working, which has been a long time. And I try to always make it as quick of a task as possible because I don't like meal prepping. It's just something that kind of stresses me out. And it's like, I don't really want to do it, but I do want to do it because I know I'll enjoy or like reap the benefits at the end of the day. But like actually having to do it is kind of annoying. Anyway, so there's just some things that I've kind of learned to make life a little bit easier. And just 2 tips for today to keep it easy, but I can share more as we go if it's of interest to you. So the first thing is overlapping bread items to put them in the freezer. So I live by myself. I, you know, don't need to eat all of the foods that come in some portions by myself. So for example, a loaf of bread. I'm not going to eat a full loaf of bread any given week because it's just too much bread. And I usually have a variety of meals I'm eating. And so it's like, I'm just not going to go through that entire loaf of bread, but I don't want to waste it. And so I've been really good in the last couple of years about freezing items proactively, like as soon as I get them, so that I'm not wasting them, they don't go bad. So that's, I guess, the first part of the tip is freeze things immediately, not like 4 days after you've opened them, just so you can like retain their freshness as much as possible. So for example, one of the types of bread I get a lot is the Ezekiel brand, which comes frozen. And if anyone has used this brand before, you know that is literally like a brick. It is frozen solid and it's very hard to get the pieces off of the loaf. So what I'll do is I'll buy it from the freezer section at the store, bring it home, put it into the refrigerator, and then let it sit there for a couple hours or a day, whatever, probably more like a couple of hours. And then once it's like thawed and it's just cold, not frozen, I'll take it out of the refrigerator, divvy out how many pieces I'm going to need that week. So maybe I need 8 pieces because I'm going to make 4 sandwiches. I'll take those 8 pieces, keep them in the bag it came in, and then I'll take all the other pieces and individually layer them in a Ziploc freezer bag where they're overlapping. So maybe it's like 3 or 4 pieces, maybe like three or four pieces kind of stacked on each other, maybe overlapping a third of the way. And then I'll do a couple different rows of that in the bag so I can get all the other bread in one bag. But the overlapping allows you to easily break off pieces whenever you want them in the future. So if you were just to freeze the, like maybe you took the 8 pieces out that you wanted to keep that week and then you just froze the loaf itself, then you're going to have to literally pry pieces off with a knife, which is not recommended, very dangerous and very annoying. So this way, if you're like, you know, 2 weeks later, you're like, I kind of feel like just a piece of toast, just one piece of toast. You can go into the freezer and just kind of snap off your one piece of bread because it's only overlapping a tiny bit, not fully stuck to another piece, and then you can put that in the freezer, in the toaster, and you're good to go. I'll do that with tortillas, English muffins, bagels, really any other kind of like bread that I don't want to eat all of them at once. I'll just take what I want, put the rest in the freezer overlapped, and then you've got it to use whenever you want to use it again. The other meal prep tip I have is regarding stickers. So I like to decant my foods, some of my foods, and put them into other containers just for the ease of using them in the future. I know that it's not the most practical thing to do, one, because you're using another container that you don't necessarily need to use, and two, because you've then moved the food to another container, which kind of opens it up for contamination and access to air and things like that. But for me, it's really about like, I want to go in there and easily see what I have and see how much I have left and scoop up what I need and not have to deal with resealable bags, which just drive me crazy. And it's just, they're just not as pretty to look at also at the end of the day. So anyway, I do a lot of decanting my foods, but I also do like to see what the macros are of the foods that I'm eating. Sometimes I track macros, sometimes I don't, but I like to have that information available if I'm interested in it at that point in time. And so what I used to do back in the day was I would cut out the like nutrition label and stick it with tape on the bottom of whatever decanted container I put that food in. But that's kind of annoying because it's a lot of steps and you have to like turn your container upside down to see what the information is. And then sometimes the tape would like stick to the jar. And it was just kind of an annoying process. So what I do instead now is I'm a big planner supplies person, which I will actually talk about a little bit later, but I have a ton of like little sticky note things, like little shaped sticky notes. A lot of them happen to be like round or like little tiny squares. And I never actually end up using them all for my planners. And so I just have like surplus of these sticky notes. So I started just using one of those little stickies as my little macros counter. And one, it's good because I'm using up my sticky notes in a way that I, you know, hadn't been using before. Two, sticky notes come off of the container much more easily than tape. And three, you can just focus on the macros that you're interested in. So for me, for example, all I really typically look at is protein and calories. So all I will do is say whatever the serving size is and then how many grams of protein and how many calories are in that serving. So maybe it's like, you know, and I usually do grams. I'm much more into grams now versus like tablespoons and teaspoons and things like that. So I'll maybe say like 20 grams of goji berries is 50 calories and 5 grams of protein. That's not a correct macro assessment. But just as an example, I'll put those three data points on my little sticky, stick it on the top of my jar. And then if I want to look at it, it's there. If I don't want to look at it, no worries. And then when I wash that jar and potentially put something else in, I just take my sticky off, throw it out, and do that process again. So I found that to be really helpful in my meal plan just because it makes things quicker. I can just quickly access what I need, again, scoop out what I want, measure it, whatever, see what my macros are if I'm interested in it, and off I go. So there you have it, just a couple of tips for you. And if, like I said, I can share more if that's something of interest. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is my house slipper system. So this is something I was thinking about the other day because I had a kind of a brilliant idea, which I will share with you. But because this is probably new to most people, I keep slippers all over my house. I have a really weird thing about tracking dirt and germs and things like that to places of the house where I don't feel like they should be. So basically what I've done is kept a pair of shoes wherever I might need to access an area that I don't want to spread those items to another area. So for example, in my house, I have a pair of slippers in my bedroom. That's like my standard slippers that I wear all throughout the house, kind of in the in-between areas. That's what I use 90% of the time. I also have a pair of slippers by the sliding glass doors that go out to the backyard. I have a pair by the garage door to go into the garage. I have a pair by the front door to go out to the porch to pick up a package. I have a pair in my gym so that I can like walk around the house while I'm doing like in between workouts. That's kind of a weird one. And then I also have a pair down in the area that goes into the basement so that I can wear them into the basement. So basically with like the basement shoes, I wear I have like a, I also have a transition pair of slippers. I'm now sounding insane. But anyway, I have a transition pair of slippers to go from the main floor down the steps to the basement. Then I switch to my basement shoes, which just go walk in the basement. Then I come back, change to my transition shoes, and then go upstairs again. So that way, each area is sticking to itself. So the basement stuff just stays in the basement. Same with the stairs. And then I have my clean standard slippers to navigate throughout the house. So I hope that makes sense. It's basically just a way to keep the majority of the house kind of quote unquote clean and germ free, while the other areas I can still have a quick pair of shoes to put on if I need to go outside or into the basement or wherever I'm going. So that being said, I discovered another need for kind of another pair of shoes while I'm doing my treadmill walks. And that's because I've been doing a lot more walking on the treadmill just throughout the day if I have time or after work or whenever it is. And I've been trying to do longer walks because I'm trying to train to do this like incline challenge that I can talk about another time. But that means that I'm on the treadmill for a long time. And because I'm on the treadmill for a long time, I often need to get off the treadmill to do something. So maybe I have to blow my nose or use the restroom, or maybe I'm like using that time to also cook something in the air fryer, so I have to keep going to check on it, things like that. And I don't want to wear my treadmill shoes, which are also just my outdoor walking shoes, throughout the house, because again, I don't want to transfer like the treadmill outside dirt to like my carpets and things like that. So I was like, okay, I hate having to take off my treadmill shoes like multiple times throughout my walk just to then have to put them back on. It's like a really annoying thing to do and a waste of time. And so I was like, oh, I have a brilliant idea. I just so happened to have a whole pack of like those paint shoe covers. I'm not sure what they're called exactly, but they're basically those little like kind of like hairnet type things that you can put over your shoes. Like a lot of times people, like technicians who will come to your house for something, will have those. So before they come inside your house, they'll put those things on their shoes so they're not bringing gross stuff into your house. It's basically those. And I have a whole pack of them for different instances, you know, that they may be needed because I'm a crazy person. But I was like, oh my gosh, I can use those when I'm walking on the treadmill. So I just took a pair of them and I threw them right behind my treadmill. So if I'm like, okay, I need to go check on the tofu that's in the air fryer, I pause the treadmill, put my little shoe covers on, walk down to the air fryer, come back, take them off, continue my walk, and so on and so forth. So I was so proud of myself because I was like, okay, this is still kind of an annoying thing to do, and I realize it's probably not necessary, but it gives me peace of mind, and I just thought it was kind of a fun, brilliant idea. So there you go. Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about today for my just kind of general section is the podcast called Hysterical. So I think I've mentioned a few times, I've been really into listening to podcasts recently. And I'm always looking for new ideas and suggestions of what to listen to because I do go through them pretty quickly and then I have nothing to listen to. So the other day, my sister and her husband told me about one that they've been listening to called Hysterical. And it's like one of those kind of limited series type of things where it's like, I think it's like 8 episodes and that's it. So it's like this, you know, a full story from start to end, just in those 8 episodes. It's not like one that kind of goes on for years and years and years to go. So it's like awesome. And it's basically about a kind of mysterious medical case situation that happened in some small town back east, maybe a little over a decade ago. And so it's kind of exploring what happened and talking to a bunch of the people. And it was really interesting from that perspective, but I have some thoughts, and I will say, you know, spoilers ahead, if you plan to listen to this and you don't want to know any details yet, then feel free to skip ahead. But basically what happened was these girls, all basically in the same school, started to get these like tics, like Tourette's like tics, and nobody could explain why all of a sudden this was happening. It like came on really quickly. Like a lot of girls developed this within like a short period of time, and they couldn't figure out what had happened. And so they were doing all these like tests and stuff to see if there was like a chemical spill or maybe something in the water. Or maybe they had some sort of virus or something that was spreading, and this was the result of that virus. And they really couldn't figure it out. And so as the name of the podcast kind of implies, it turns out that it was, oh gosh, I don't remember the specific medical diagnosis for it, but it's basically like hysteria, like mass hysteria, where there was no actual physical reason for this to happen. It was all just like in their heads. Like one person for some reason started doing this, and then it just like scared the other people. And so they also started exhibiting the same signs. And so they kind of talk a lot in the podcast about how this has happened many, many times throughout history. Like, for example, they were saying like the Salem witch trials, they think, was perhaps an example of this like mass hysteria. And I don't know, something about it just really didn't sit well with me. It just kind of annoyed me. And look, I am no medical expert, and who's to say? I think that humans are complex, and there's a lot of things that happen that we don't know why they happen. And so I don't know enough to say anything other than my own personal opinion, which is that I find mass hysteria to be annoying. And I think it's because I am so annoyed with this point in time of like social media and everyone copying each other. And I don't know, something about it just, it's just like, like really, like you saw somebody else had a symptom, and so you're going to have that symptom. And I guess it's kind of akin to like hypochondria, and I just don't like that kind of thing. It just really bothers me when people just like jump on the bandwagon, whether it's intentional or not. I fully believe that none of these girls did this on purpose. I think it was just something that like happened organically, and it was just something they couldn't control. But nevertheless, it just, I don't know, it just really annoyed me. I almost stopped listening to the podcast because I was just like, I don't care. Like, I would be much more interested in a medical mystery that was a result of some sort of virus or bacteria or something in the water. Like, to me, that's more interesting, something that's more objective, like scientific, like this actually happened, versus just like people in their minds, like their brains just kind of like doing this to them. But I kept listening, and I'm glad I did, because there was a lot of like little offshoot stories that were really interesting. So at the end of the day, I highly recommend listening to it. It's a really good food for thought type of podcast, but I don't know. And I'm sure a very unpopular opinion, and I don't really know why it bothers me, but it just kind of did. And it did also start to get me thinking about another thing that I've been noticing a lot in the last couple of years that also kind of annoys me. And it's people who, how do I want to word this? I feel like I need to address it delicately. I feel like people who have one thing wrong with them have everything wrong with them. And I'm really starting to notice this a lot, whether it's people that I kind of know, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend kind of thing, or people on TV or whatever. It's like when it rains, it pours. And I don't know how much of that is like actual scientific, like, hey, this person truly does have all these things, versus more of this, like, are they just making themselves think they have all these things, again, whether intentional or not. So for example, and I certainly won't name any names, but there's a couple of people that I've seen, you know, out and about in the world of entertainment where they'll kind of be like, okay, well, I am diagnosed with anxiety. Let's just say it starts with anxiety. And then all of a sudden they have PCOS, and then they have ADHD, and then they have SIBO, and then they have this and they have that. And it's like, oh my gosh, like why is it because you had one thing that you have all the things? And it's just this trend. Like, they also can't sleep. They have, what's that called, where you can't sleep, you know, insomnia. And it's just like, I think this is a you problem. And I know that sounds horrible, but it just seems so strange to me that like why would this one person be inflicted with all these different things, you know? And maybe there is a connection to that. Again, I have absolutely no idea. So maybe there is a scientific reason why if you have X, Y, and Z, you're also more prone to have A, B, and C. So if that's the case, like, that's totally fine. And again, I don't think anyone is doing it necessarily intentionally. I think it's just like maybe a personality type where like you just tend to kind of focus on things more. And so you either bring these things upon yourself or you think you have these things or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It just seems like there's like these trends of like, I have all this stuff and then they keep having more and more things. And it's always something new to be diagnosed and more medication. And all I can think to myself is like, are you making it worse by taking all these medications and stressing yourself out because you think you have these things and that in turn brings something else up? And I don't know. I'm not sure if anyone else has this opinion, but just something I'm kind of noticing. And I feel like that kind of ties back again to this podcast of just like, I just think it's like an interesting thing that some people's brains bring upon all of these things. And like, it's crazy how your brain can bring upon physical symptoms when maybe there really wasn't a reason for it to be there in the first place. So there you have it. With that, I'm going to move on to my positive thought just because that was a little bit negative Nancy of me. And yeah, so my positive thought of the week is that I talked about this a little bit last week of like a new season coming, and one of the benefits of a new season coming means you get to wear new clothes again. And I guess it's more pertinent for me because I live in a climate that has pretty significant seasons in that I can't wear all of my clothes all year round because it would be either too hot or too cold for a lot of my clothes. So there's like a whole section of my closet that is tank tops and t-shirts and vests and like, you know, like cut off shoulder vests and things like that, that I simply cannot wear half of the year. It's far too cold. I'm not putting a tank top on in the middle of January. And so I was really excited because I was looking at them the other day and I'm like, okay, like I see some 70s, like some low 70s coming on the weather forecast in the next like week or two. And so I'm like, oh, I might get to actually wear one of my tank tops or my t-shirts again. And yeah, I just thought that was a really fun thing to look forward to, you know, for this next 6 months is like, oh, these clothes that I haven't worn in a long time kind of seem like new because I haven't used them in so long. So yeah, I was excited about that. And then my stray thought of the week is related to planners. So I know I mentioned I would talk about this earlier in the podcast, but I have been watching a lot of planner content on YouTube lately, and I'm a huge planner person. I'm a huge planner fan. I love the idea of planners, but my thought was like, why is it so much harder to execute planner life than it seems? So like I will watch all these people with these beautiful planners and they have beautiful handwriting. They're using all these cute sticky notes and stickers for flair and everything looks so organized and like full, and it just is so inviting. But I cannot replicate that in my own planner. So I, every single year for Christmas, ask for a planner of some sort. I usually change it up because I haven't found one I love yet that I want to continue using. But I'll get the planner and all the accessories, and then I don't know what to do with it. And this is just something that happens year after year after year. I just have the planner and I'm like, okay, I don't know how to use it. Like it never gets filled out like the people online do. It just never looks as clean and beautiful. And I think it's because I do so much digitally that I don't need to also write it down, but I love the look and the idea of writing it down. I just don't know how to make it happen. And so I don't know. I feel like maybe I just need to give up on trying to be a planner person and just watch other people do their planner stuff because they can do it so much better than me. So I don't know. I'm still on a journey to, you know, maybe someday I will become that planner person, but for now it's just falling a little bit flat and I will just have to enjoy the people on YouTube instead. So that was my stray thought of the week. Thank you as always for listening, and I hope you have a great day.